Today is Tuesday, February 16th, and you're listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinua Dwofo, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. Coming up, Speaker Pelosi announces commission to probe Capitol siege.
In a letter to Democratic colleagues, she says the House will also put forth supplemental spending to boost security.
Also ahead, police file new charges against ousted Myanmar leader Aung San Suu Kyi.
Violence has been limited during the demonstrations, although police have opened fire on several occasions to disperse crowds.
Plus, the WHO probes Ebola outbreak in the DRC and Guinea. These stories and more are next. House of Representatives Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will establish an independent commission to look into the deadly insurrection that took place at the U.S. Capitol. Pelosi says the commission will investigate the facts relating to the January 6th attack upon the United States Capitol complex. The speaker says in a letter to Democratic colleagues that the House will also put forth a spending bill to boost security at the Capitol. Bipartisan support appears to be growing for an independent commission to look into what Speaker Pelosi describes as a domestic terror attack on the Capitol.
AP correspondent Jennifer King reports.
House Speaker Nancy Pelosi says Congress will establish an independent September 11th-style commission to look into the deadly insurrection at the U.S. Capitol. In a letter to Democratic colleagues, she says the House will also put forth supplemental spending to boost security. In an interview with ABC's This Week, Louisiana Senator Bill Cassidy, one of seven Republicans who voted to convict Trump, said there should be a complete investigation about what happened.
What was known, who knew it, and when they knew it, all that, because that builds the basis so this never happens again in the future.
Jennifer King, Washington.
U.S. President Joe Biden has signaled his administration's foreign policy agenda will take a more conciliatory tone with American allies and a sterner stance with advisories. To get one African expert's recommendations on what U.S. foreign policy towards the continent should be going forward, VOA's Adam Phillips spoke with Idiyat Hassan, the director of the Center for Democracy and Development, an Abuja, Nigeria-based institution dedicated to democratic accountability, peace, security, and transitional justice in West Africa. Hassan began by rejecting a, quote, top-down, unquote, approach to foreign affairs, favoring instead a more, quote, bottom-up, unquote, grassroots strategy.
Traditional approach for previous administration has been to promote democracy through the state apparatus, but it has not been useful. So to counter this, we are encouraging the Biden administration to engage more collaboration between American and African news organizations, civil rights law firms, civil society organizations, youth groups, because Africans are open to multi-party democracy. They want constitutionalism, they want liberal values, and above all, they want rights. Right, right, right. That's what Africans actually want.
What else do you recommend?
The U.S. should continue to impose sanctions on anti-democratic forces, but specific people, not one that actually targets the country. Uganda is an example of what happened during the last elections. We know that there were very senior military commanders who falsely imprisoned the opposition politician Bobi Wine for days and his wife, and he was not even able to exercise his freedom of movement. Those persons should be identified and sanctioned. The same for Nigeria during the NSAS protests. We know people who actually killed protesters, and they should be identified and sanctioned. But when sanctions are unilaterally applied on a country, it is the people who actually suffer, while the perpetrators travel to different parts of the world to enjoy their look.
Earlier this month, President Biden issued an historic memorandum putting the U.S. at, quote, the forefront of the struggle, close quote, for LGBTQ rights. Your reaction?
LGBT rights are human rights. But on the flip side, addressing LGBT rights as a cornerstone of the Biden administration policy has got the effect of pushing Africa into the hands of China, because a blanket promotion of LGBT rights is construed as being against the culture of the people as well as the religion of the people, aside from the laws which some autocrats have promulgated.
What about America's economic competition with China in terms of investments on the continent?
America does not necessarily have to compete with China in terms of investments. What it needs to do is emphasize people-to-people engagement, people-to-people learning, company-to-company, organizations-to-organizations, because soft power is able to tilt in the favor of the United States.
That's Idiyat Hassan, director of the Center for Democracy and Development in Abuja, Nigeria. She spoke with my colleague, Adam Phillips. Police in Myanmar have filed a new charge against ousted leader Aung San Suu Kyi, her lawyer said Tuesday, which may allow her to be held indefinitely without trial. Her lawyer told reporters after meeting with a judge that Suu Kyi has been charged with violating Article 25 of the Natural Disasters Management Law, which has been used to prosecute people who have broken coronavirus restrictions. Suu Kyi, who was ousted in a military coup on February 1st, has already been charged with possessing walkie-talkies that were imported without being registered. The new charge may allow her to be held indefinitely without trial because a change in the penal code made by the junta permits detention without court permission. Protesters in Myanmar kept up demands for the release of ousted civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi and an end to military rule, though crowds were smaller after the junta deployed armored vehicles and more soldiers on the streets. Lauren Anthony reports.
Security forces used rubber bullets, catapults and armoured vehicles to control crowds of protesters in Myanmar on Monday, demanding the release of ousted civilian leader Aung San Suu Kyi and an end to military rule. In the city of Mandalay, two people were wounded from rubber bullets, according to media and residents, though the government and army could not be reached for comment. Suu Kyi has been detained since the coup earlier this month against her elected government. She had been expected to face a court on Monday in connection with charges of illegally importing six walkie-talkie radios. But according to her lawyer, a judge said her remand lasted until Wednesday. Violence has been limited during the demonstrations, although police have opened fire on several occasions to disperse crowds, such as this scene Sunday night in the city of Myitkyina. One woman who was hit by police fire in the capital Naypyidaw last week is not expected to survive. The military is also facing a strike by state workers as part of a civil disobedience movement that is crippling many functions of government.
That's Lauren Anthony of Reuters. The DRC recently announced a resurgence of cases of Ebola in the country after its 11th outbreak ended 3 months ago. Guinea has officially declared an Ebola outbreak 5 years after the epidemic in West Africa. For more, VOA's Leonard Modu spoke with Dr. Nsenga Ngoy, Program Manager for Emergency Response at the WHO Regional Office for Africa.
What we know for this outbreak is that in DRC first, so we are now counting about four cases detected in the province of North Kivu. And what we know is that all those cases are actually linked to the previous Ebola outbreak. So that's why we are saying this is a resurgence. This is not a new outbreak in DRC. For Guinea, we are also they have now recorded about seven cases in Guinea, but obviously this is not directly related. But the investigation is still going. This is not related to the outbreak we had 5 years ago, but this is apparently a new outbreak in Guinea.
When we're dealing with a resurgence versus a new outbreak, are there some difference in strategies?
You are absolutely right. I mean, that's a very good question. Operationally, what we are intending to do in both cases is to stop the spread of Ebola as quickly as possible. to bring what we call technically to bring the outbreak under control. That's what we're doing now. So the measure to achieve that objective, they are the same. We need to win over the community to work with us and to be part of the response, and to abide by what we call public health measures, including at all cost avoid getting in touch with body fluid of person who's sick or who has contracted Ebola. And obviously the other measure, including, thankfully, now we have a vaccine, include vaccination of those contact, of the person who have been in contact with the sick person. And of course we need to track, contact, to follow the contact. Any person who has been in contact with a sick person to be followed at least for 21 days and make sure that if she or he falls sick, it doesn't transmit to the next person. So in terms of approach and strategy, there are not much difference, but at least it's very important to know which situation are we dealing with. Because, for instance, we know that the vaccine that we're using in DRC is effective in one space of Ebola. So knowing that it's the same space is very important. You can confidently vaccinate people knowing that they will be protected against that space of Ebola, and it will contribute to bring the outbreak as quickly as possible under control.
That's VOA's Leonard Modu speaking with Dr. Nsengah Ngoi, Program Manager for Emergency Response at the WHO Regional Office for Africa. Two men accused of leading Christian-dominated militias in widespread attacks on Muslims in the Central African Republic go on trial Tuesday at the International Criminal Court. Emma McCarthy of Reuters reports.
Two men accused of leading Christian-dominated militias in widespread attacks on Muslims in the Central African Republic will face trial Tuesday at the International Criminal Court. Prosecutors say that Patrice Edouard Ngaissona, a former top African soccer executive, was a senior leader and national coordinator of the so-called anti-Balaka militias in 2013 and 2014. The 53-year-old has been charged with war crimes and crimes against humanity, including murder, rape, persecution and torture. Co-accused Alfred Yekatom, a former militia commander, faces similar charges, with additional counts for his alleged use of child soldiers. Both men have said they are innocent. The Central African Republic has been mired in violence since a coalition of mostly northern and predominantly Muslim rebels known as Seleka seized power in March 2013. Their brutal rule gave rise to the opposing anti-Balaka Christian militias. After initial criticism that its investigation into the CAR was one-sided, with only anti-Balaka leaders in the dock, the ICC in January announced it had detained the alleged Seleka leader too. Ngaissona was detained in 2018 while in France on official business, his lawyer told judges at the time. A French court approved his extradition on December 31. He was controversially elected in as top executive of the Confederation of African Football in 2018, but is no longer listed as a member on the CAF website.
That's Emma McCarthy of Reuters. Iran State TV says Iranian and Russian militaries have kicked off a joint naval drill in the Indian Ocean aimed at boosting security of maritime trade in the region. The report said units from Iran's Navy and the powerful Revolutionary Guards Navy will take part in the exercise dubbed Iran-Russia Maritime Security Belt 2021 in the northern part of Indian Ocean. France's lower house of parliament is voting on a bill that would strengthen government oversight on mosques and religious schools and crack down on polygamy and forced marriage. It's part of a broader French efforts to fight Islamic extremism after a teacher was beheaded and other recent attacks. But many French Muslims fear the draft law unfairly targets their religion and say France already has laws to fight terrorism. President Emmanuel Macron says it's needed to protect French values like gender equality and secularism.
You-
You are listening to International Edition on the Voice of America. I am Chinedu Ofor, broadcasting from Washington, D.C. In a historic move, the World Trade Organization has chosen the first woman and first African to lead the organization. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Nigerian economist Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala has called her appointment as Director General of the World Trade Organization groundbreaking. She told members of the General Council that she was eager to begin the work of reforming the organization and modernizing the rules to bring them up to 21st century issues.
I'm grateful for the trust you have in me, not just as a woman and an African, but also in my knowledge, experience, and as some of you have said, courage and passion to work with you to undertake the wide-ranging reforms the WTO needs to reposition itself for the future.
Okonjo-Iweala said the challenges facing the WTO were numerous and tricky, but not insurmountable. She said one of her key priorities was to focus on the issue of COVID-19 and what the WTO could do to contribute to solutions. She said the WTO needs to work with the COVAX and ACTS Accelerator facilities, as well as with other organizations working to accelerate supplies and vaccines to poor countries.
We also encourage finding what I call a third way in which vaccines can be manufactured in many more countries whilst taking care that we don't discourage research and innovation, which is linked to intellectual property rights. So this is an area of work.
Okonjo-Iweala's selection as WTO chief was held up for many months because former President Donald Trump did not back her and refused to join the consensus regarding her candidacy. The Biden administration dropped the U.S. objection, clearing her way to getting the top job. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Nigerians are congratulating Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala as the new Director General of the World Trade Organization. For more, I reached Abuja-based economist Prince Ned Nwoko, who worked with Okonjo-Iweala when she was Nigeria's finance minister.
What we know for this outbreak is that in DRC first, so we are now counting about four cases detected in the province of North Kivu. And what we know is that all those cases are actually linked to the case, to the previous Ebola outbreak. So this is that's why we are saying this is a resurgence. This is not a new outbreak in DRC. For Guinea, they have now recorded about seven cases in Guinea, but obviously this is not directly related. But the investigation is still going. This is not related to the outbreak we had 5 years ago, but this is apparently a new outbreak in Guinea.
When we're dealing with a resurgence versus a new outbreak, are there some difference in strategies?
You are absolutely right. That's a very good question. So operationally, what we are intending to do in both cases is to stop the spread of Ebola as quickly as possible. To bring what we call technically to bring the outbreak under control. That's what we're doing now. So the measure to achieve that objective, they are the same. We need to win over the community to work with us and to be part of the response and to abide by what we call public health measures, including at all cost, avoid getting in touch with a body fluid of person who's sick or who has contracted Ebola. And obviously, the other measure, including, thankfully, now we have a vaccine, include vaccination of those contact, of the person who have been in contact with the sick person. And of course, we need to track contact, to follow the contact. Any person who has been in contact with a sick person to be followed at least for 21 days and make sure that if she or he falls sick, it doesn't transmit to the next person. So in terms of approach and strategy, there are not much difference, but at least it's very important to know which situation are we dealing with. Because, for instance, we know that the vaccine that we're using in DRC is effective in one space of Ebola. So knowing that it's the same space is very important. You can confidently vaccinate people knowing that they will be protected against that space of Ebola, and it will contribute to bring the outbreak as quickly as possible under control.
That's Nigerian economist Prince Ned Nwoko speaking from Abuja. As the Australian state of Victoria enters its third day of snap COVID-19 lockdown, the National Medical Association is calling for urgent changes to infection control in hotel quarantine. Australian travellers returning from overseas must go into isolation for at least 14 days on arrival, but doctors are worried that the airborne transmission of the virus is not being taken seriously enough. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Biosecurity is a growing concern for Australia's hotel quarantine system after new and highly contagious variants of COVID-19 were detected among returned travellers. A five-day lockdown imposed in Victoria State Friday was in response to a cluster of infections at a hotel at Melbourne Airport. Infections were passed from passengers to staff, allowing the virus to spread into the community. The lockdown was ordered to give contact tracers enough time to track known associates of those who've tested positive to the virus. Doctors, however, believe that ventilation and personal protective equipment for hotel workers needs to be urgently reviewed. Chris Moy, the Federal Vice President of the Australian Medical Association, says biosecurity controls need to be tightened.
Quarantine is our first and most important line of defence. There have been holes punched in it, particularly with these new strains. It's not just droplet spread, which is the big droplets, which, you know, you can just cough out. It just stays quite local, to this airborne spread where essentially COVID can be taken up as a mist and stay in the air and therefore be far more infectious for a long period of time.
Victoria is in its third coronavirus lockdown since the pandemic began. More citizens are being allowed to return to New South Wales, Australia's most populous state, from Monday. But the Victorian government has suggested that repatriation flights be heavily restricted to curb the spread of new virus variants. State Premier Daniel Andrews said Australia had to have a cold, hard discussion about reducing international arrivals. His comments have caused anger and dismay among thousands of Australians stranded overseas. Foreign nationals were banned from Australia last March, but citizens and permanent residents can return. They face mandatory quarantine on arrival, and weekly quotas are limiting the number of travellers allowed home. The government in Canberra has also announced it will stop quarantine-free travel for New Zealanders after three COVID-19 cases were recorded in Auckland, which has been placed into a snap three-day lockdown. Australia's first shipment of the Pfizer vaccine has arrived, but federal authorities have conceded that its distribution across such a vast country won't be a flawless exercise. A mass inoculation program is due to begin by the end of the month. Australia has recorded just under 29,000 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began. Across the Tasman Sea, New Zealand has detected about 2,200 infections. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
That's it for our show today. For more in-depth and breaking news 24 hours a day, please visit voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our managing editor, Kate Pound-Dawson, I am Chinedu Ofo in Washington. Thank you so much for listening, and have a great day.
following issues in the news, moderator Shana Estulin and a panel of Washington experts as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the WHO grants an emergency authorization to the coronavirus vaccine made by AstraZeneca, a move that should allow its partners to ship millions of doses to countries worldwide. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday.